Hey everyone, welcome to the Product Leadership Podcast from Lighthouse London, where we talk about how to validate, launch, and maintain successful digital products with product owners, innovators, digital experts, and founders. I'm here today with Digby and Hugo from Feast It. Welcome.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks very much for having us.
No problems. Thanks for coming in. We talked to you a while ago when you were first building Feast It as a platform, so I know a little bit about certainly where you've been, where you've come from. Why don't you both introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about what Feast It is and where you are right now.
Yeah, I mean, kick things off by saying at its most basic form, Feast It is an online booking platform for event catering. So you can come onto our website, put in your postcode, put in the date of your event, and what you'll see immediately is a list of available caterers for your event. At the moment, we're working largely with street food traders, so that's from big brands like the Patty and Bun Truck and the Dirty Burger Truck, right down to the people you'll find on Broadway and kind of Maltby Street Market. They just have to be delicious, they just have to kind of look cool, and then we're happy to have them on the platform. And we're in the process at the moment of adding alcohol and traditional caterers onto the platform as well.
Cool. And how did you guys kind of meet? What's your background as entrepreneurs?
Hugh and I kind of were friends with each other for a number of years. We actually grew up as neighbours when we were about six.
Oh, no way.
So we were the only two. We grew up on a small farm in the middle of nowhere and we were the only two people on it. So we were kind of forced cool. to hang out with each other.
So it's a long journey to get here.
It's been a 20-odd year journey.
Yeah, about the 20th anniversary of our relationship
now. That's cool. How's that been working with people that you know so well? I mean, like, so my co-founder I've known for 25 years as well. We went to school together and everyone says you shouldn't start a business with your best friends. Seems to have worked out all right for you guys so far.
Yeah, it's been interesting. A lot of people gave us the same advice and I personally totally disagree with it. I think it gives you an insight in that we have an ability that we can argue and kind of we know each other incredibly well where there's less of a need to hold each other's tongues and you don't need to respect each other in quite the same way that you would if it's someone that you kind of only have a business relationship with.
Yeah.
So you can be a lot more honest and open, you think?
Well, exactly. There's just no need to ever kind of, if there are cracks, we don't try and paper them over. We can just sort of get right at the issue without actually offending each other, which is actually, I think, I mean, I'm obviously... It might be the same with you guys as well, but it's great for us to have that option, like on the table, that we can just go straight to the heart of things and not mess around.
I fully agree. I think maybe that says a lot about your relationship as friends and what I have with Dan, my co-founder. I know there are certain friends that I wouldn't be able to do what I do with them, but that's another matter.
Yeah, I think you and I is probably the only friend I'd ever work with.
So what are you guys' backgrounds before starting Feast It?
So I was a journalist. I worked at The Independent in a kind of a lot of roles. Firstly, started off as just a traditional journalist writing online news, then went on to edit the opinion page for a while. And then my final role there was involved in the creation and then the editing of their new iPad app that they were making. So it actually, I mean, while I was qualified as a journalist, actually the end of my stint there actually gave me a bit of kind of technical expertise, which actually really helped going forwards with Feast It.
And I'm kind of come from more of an events background. So I worked for a couple of years in the States, so for a year in DC, where I worked at the Smithsonian, and then moved out to LA, where I worked for a company called Brit Week, where we put on kind of a series of events in LA, San Francisco, and Orange County. And then after that, I moved back to London and worked at a startup called Festticket in London.
Okay.
Which across kind of, so predominantly kind of music festivals and kind of large public facing events.
Nice. And what kind of sparked the idea for the business?
So the very initial spark it came when, so when I was at Festticket, we worked across about 400 different festivals in Europe and we were really often mistaken as being the supplier. So kind of the main people who created the event. So we would get a lot of emails from people under that assumption. So my inbox was full, kind of hundreds of emails a day from people looking to cater events or being bands that want to be booked. And kind of the more and more we looked into it, it seemed kind of slightly ludicrous. There wasn't a platform looking at the best possible suppliers and matching them with the best possible events. And then that kind of started the conversation with Hugo. And then kind of from there, the more research we did and the more we spoke about it, really there was nothing that was consumer facing either. And then if you kind of have both, it's the same supply was doing everything from people's 18ths and weddings through to kind of Glastonbury and Reading. And that there's still no one who really sat in the middle of all of those suppliers and kind of acted both on their behalf in getting them more events, but then also kind of on the behalf of the events and matching the best possible people with each other.
Okay.
Yeah. And we do a very wide range of events. So anything from, at this point, we've done, you know, canapes for 20 people right up to a festival with 40,000 people. So we kind of...
Oh, okay, wow.
The scope of the traders that we work with is effectively endless. We can cater just about anything. We just have this supply of amazing caterers.
I've been through the listings before and was kind of overwhelmed with the choice, but there's so much amazing stuff on there.
Yeah, I think kind of like the weekend just gone was a pretty good example of that, where we had, I think we had two weddings, a big public-facing event with the Royal Academy.
A 40th, I think, as well.
Cool.
There was maybe an 18th thread in there. So, I should know that off the top of my head, but definitely... But we do all range of private and then corporate events as well. So lots of what we do. It's almost about 50-50 down the middle, actually. Interestingly, it's 50%, 18ths, weddings, 21st, and then the other half being office parties, any kind of corporate events as well.
And has that always been the focus from launch, or have you kind of moved into one of those areas after?
Well, in terms of
who you were targeting,
private versus kind of corporate.
Yeah.
So actually, all the data before suggested, the data that we could find suggested that it would be roughly a 50-50 split. So we were quite careful to say we're not going to be going down either one of these routes. And I would say it's been pretty reflective of that in terms of what we do. We think it's probably slightly weighted in favor of private events, but not by much.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say we prefer to do the corporate ones, generally speaking, because people are working with their business's money rather than their own money.
Yeah.
So they are a bit quicker to make decisions. Quite rightly, people agonize over every single catering decision when it comes to your wedding and stuff like that. But obviously, for us, when we're dealing with a catering, it's just slightly longer lead time.
Well, the corporate people will probably have done this stuff before as well,
exactly.
Right? So it's not just like a one-off purchase, something that they'd be repeating, so it might be more familiar with the process.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. Have you seen a shift in customer in the time that you... I mean, because how long have you been live for now?
So we launched at the very end of January this year. So we're coming up to, 9 months at this point? It's about 9 months, yeah.
Cool. And have you seen a big shift in anything changing there that was unexpected or...?
I mean, it's interesting. Someone asked us similar question the other day, and we realized that the biggest thing that we learned was we got very lucky early on that our first ever customer was Samsung, mm-hmm. and it was a big event for them, and it was I mean it was potluck. When we turned the website on, we'd put £15 in ad spend into the account, and then within about 5 minutes we got a £25,000 order from Samsung.
God, that's the dream.
So obviously at that point Hugh and I started planning our retirement funds, and if every 5 minutes is going to be this good, then I think that was really, really lucky for us in terms of it meant that every other meeting we went to after then we could say, you know, we've worked with Samsung. It suddenly we had this big legitimizer that, and it really directed our initial growth strategy. So to begin with, we realized very quickly that the best strategy would be to go sales focused rather than marketing focused. That was because it kind of seemed where the lowest hanging fruit was, and we realized that these big corporates, we could get a £25,000 order rather than, you know, through marketing would enable us to get, you know, £21,000 orders. So to begin with, that seemed like the really, really logical route to go. And then probably over the last month, we're now starting to shift it and kind of bring it, we're trying to make it more equal. We're trying to lower the basket value and increase the number of orders. So that's seen a big shift. So it's kind of gone from a handful of events a month in the first couple of months that were worth large sums of money to being more and more small value orders, which is kind of what you want from a marketplace, ideally.
Definitely. And how are you doing that shift? Is it you're saying more attention to content marketing, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's been that. I think it's the lesson that both Hugh and I would have said that if we could go back and talk to ourselves in January, the number one thing we would have done was hire a head of marketing in January and not wait. We waited probably till it was about May until we did it. And that's because both of us came from more sales backgrounds. So that we kind of followed our skill sets. It was working great for us. We were managing to bring in big orders, but we didn't really put the value that we should have done into marketing. And that's been the big shift, is having someone come in who's really good at what they do and just really, really helping realign our focuses and kind of push us more and more to doing, you know, so whether it be content marketing or paid marketing, kind of across the board. And then, you know, when you've got someone who's good at it, you suddenly watch your kind of cost per acquisition drop from £40 down to £10.
Yeah,
and suddenly you're going, okay, well, actually, there's a really big value in what they're doing. they've quartered my marketing spend. So, yeah. And that's, I think that's kind of, for us, that was like the biggest lesson. And then also that's really changed the customers that we're interacting with as well.
Yeah. The one thing that we were potentially missing to start with, despite the fact that we had the legitimacy of working with some big brands quite early, which was really good for us, was that we were a young company and we didn't quite go into deals maybe with the confidence that we do now. So now actually we go in, and what we prefer to do is actually, rather than people saying, I want to book this caterer for my event, we can go in and say, describe your event, let us give you the perfect caterer. Which we do feel we're getting quite good at now. And then people are happy to go with our decisions, which works better for us because it means we can analyze a deal, put forward the caterer we think is absolutely right and sew it up quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Plus, we're giving the customer the benefit of actually having it almost scientifically matched to their event.
Oh, okay. And you're doing that manually still?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's a big basket value. So often for these events, the website is a booking platform, and so people can come on and book their caterer within seconds, and that's done very quickly. So you can just type in through the filter system exactly what you're looking for, and it will reflect the perfect caterer for you. And then the paying process takes, it's just like going through Airbnb or a website that. But then if people come to us kind of bespoke over the phone as well, we can offer that because it's a big basket value. It's a thousands of pounds decision.
Fair enough.
And we're happy to, talk them through the event and recommend traders who are great for it.
Yeah, I think the kind of nature of something like us is we're a bit more like a one fine stay than an Airbnb. Because it's the very nature of it, it's a fairly luxury product, catering. So if you're coming to us, you a lot of people, it's their first time ever booking it if they're kind of B2C, and they do need a little bit more hand holding. So that's part of the service that we're trying to offer is, we've now done 400 events, whatever it is, since January. So it means we're in a position where we can be pretty accurate with saying this is what we'd really recommend as the best solution.
That's cool. And presumably you work that out when you find people come to you and don't quite know what they need, and that becomes a part of the offering that provides value.
It made a huge difference, I think. So to begin with, we were a direct booking platform. That was the MVP was the same as a flight booking platform, any kind of booking platform. And then we realized pretty early on that we were losing a lot of people who just didn't actually know what they were looking for. So if you don't know the difference between patty and bun and dirty burger, and then you do kind of need someone to point you in the right direction. So we kind of introduced a form they could fill out that gave us all the details of the event, and someone can just give them a call and talk them through it and kind of then bring them back onto the platform and kind of direct them to who they should be booking.
Nice. So you mentioned that you've got a marketing person on board now. How big is the team? What's it expanded to?
The team's on 8 at the moment. So that including us too. So we have a business development manager, marketing, 2 event organizers, someone who's in charge of our other department, the other kind of bit that we do on the side, which is our non-prepaid events, which obviously with street food is quite a big thing. And then we also have someone whose role is to bring on, identify and bring new traders onto the platform as well.
Yeah.
So with the non-prepaid, we realized quite early on that we're getting lots of offers for it, and that it was a really good way of almost doing marketing. So we're having people like the RA and the Roundhouse come to us and say, we want someone to provide street food traders. For us, it was brilliant. It meant that we could interact, we get a very quick interaction with the traders. So if we got a new trader on the platform, we could very quickly get them some form of booking through us, even though it might not be, the £4,000 prepaid wedding. Mm-hmm. It might just be doing a day's service at the Roundhouse.
Yeah.
But it meant that we could get them to interact with us as a platform, and then we could also then get them to put signage up saying book us on Feast It or something like that.
And so it's like a co-branded thing.
Exactly. So it basically meant that, it's not produced huge amounts of revenue, but it's a marketing department that's now provided £10,000 in profit. And we've done 150 events through it. So it's
a brand awareness thing as
well,
right?
Yeah, so I mean, and it's generated probably, in the hundreds of thousands of pounds for our traders. So it's got goodwill on that front. We've provided extra revenue to the traders. We're making money out of it, so it's paying for the salary of the person who organises it, as well as a profit on top of that. And then also it's getting a lot more people to see us. And then through that, we've seen with people, there's been businesses where we've done their office lunches and they've now then used us for their big corporate summer party.
Cool.
Or vice versa. It's worked really well as a kind of, we kind of view it more as marketing than we do any other kind of department.
Yeah.
Even though it's still an events business.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Is it a way to kind of try out new traders as well to see quality?
Absolutely. And... Yeah. We're quite keen on tracking. We have a few officers who will set them up to work out at lunch, and we always take the weather, how many portions they'll do, what they serve of what portions, just so it also gives us a real insight into the data of street food, which no one else is really taking at the moment. So, we can actually, it gives us the potential in the future to be able to really say, look, if it's going to be rainy on that day, what you want to get is this will sell particularly well. And
that's really cool.
Yeah, kind of on the top level, you've got the really obvious things like people don't eat hamburgers on a Monday, they eat them on a Thursday, which,
I have been known to.
It's kind of confirmed things that we already knew, but then has spit out interesting things. And it also gives us a chance that if we're finding out what cuisines people are eating probably slightly earlier than we would have done if it was just prepaid events. So when we're doing large events, we're kind of able to give better insight.
Absolutely. Well, that's great data to have as a kind of long-term benefit to the business and see trends overall, that kind
of
stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
More ways to make money out of what you're doing on top of just the simple stuff that you're selling, which is the food or the traders. So how have you guys seen your roles change?
I think, to be honest, Hugo, your role has probably been the one that's changed the most. So kind of pre-launch, Hugo was very much onboarding traders. That was kind of...
So everything that I've done has basically been to do with... Well, first, in the lead up to everything, my role was to get all the traders on board. And that was making sure, again, that we were working with big brands from the moment that we launched to make sure that we were given that legitimacy. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been still, working on the trader side of things. So that's booking them into events and, effectively managing them in the build up to the event, making sure we've still got a really good relationship with them, going out and finding new events as well. So effectively on the ops side of things. Whereas your role, I think, has been in the more kind of,
in the lead up to launch, it was far more about funding and that kind of traditional, that primary role. We both sat across actual development of the platform pretty closely. And then my role is more marketing and the fundraising pre-launch. And then kind of since it's been more kind of, I guess, manager role and more kind of sitting across marketing and biz dev. And then kind of Hugo sat across ops. But it's been interesting. I think they have changed quite a lot since we launched in terms of now there's someone whose job is to bring on new traders and that kind of suddenly opened up our time. And then things like learning how to do accounts, which pre-launch wasn't a problem because there was just one pile of money that went down. And then now suddenly it becomes a lot more complicated when there's money coming in.
Luckily, I've never had to learn how to do accounts.
I think if you look at our calendar from 6 to midnight tonight, that's going to be a laugh.
Hi, this is Dan. We've been working on the product leadership framework that helps teams install great product strategy in their organizations. If you want to find out more, head to wearelighthouse.com/product-leadership-framework.
When we've spoken before, you guys have said how busy you are. Do you have problems with that kind of work-life split still, or...?
Yes. I think it's both part of our character. Neither of us are very easily satisfied. I don't know if that's the right best way of putting it. In terms of, it's things I think like our friends were much happier for us than we were when we got our funding. And our instant reaction was like, what's the next thing? So kind of in July we had a really ambitious target that we wanted to hit and we hit it. And, there was no point to Hugh and I necessarily tap on the back and kind of celebrate it. I think I got annoyed at him because it wasn't 5% higher. I think that was kind of the fact, and that's kind of very much, I think that's our attitude, so which doesn't lend itself to having a particularly good work-life balance
for now. It's one of those things as well that I think we both fully realise the fact that we're in the first year of operating a very young company and we're going to have to work incredibly hard if we're going to make it work, and we can't be satisfied with anywhere we get to this year because we can always go one step better. And, I think maybe after a year, maybe after the next round, we'll be able to, I do have moments of reflection every now and again when I look back and go, God, we've done a whole load of events kind of thing, and that's great, but then it's sort of right back, and we do have another target to hit this month, so I've got to get right back on it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, where you guys are, the stage the company's in, it's going to be pretty full on, you know?
Yeah,
But at least you're aware of that.
No, I think, also, I think we're not massively part of the startup scene.
And you used an agency to build that in the past. Like, how did that come about?
I think we both started to find it a little bit irritating, everyone telling us how brilliant they were doing. That hustle, that whole attitude that everyone had towards it, around, you get so surrounded by it in London, where everything you go to, that's the conversation. And I think for us, it didn't sit very well, so... Yeah,
that's probably a good thing to not be involved in.
We'll find out in a couple of months.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the heart of this, you have a tech product. So you have an online platform that people use, and you use an agency to build that in the past. Like, how did that come about? And how have you found the experience of maybe being not totally techie people building a product that has tech at its heart?
I think so. That was easily the biggest stumbling block, right? And so Hugh and I have no tech background at all. I mean, we've learnt bits and bobs having built Feaster, but I mean, to be honest, like, I mean, going into it really
I embellished my app building background at the beginning.
but in terms of actually like pure coding, it's not something Hugo had UX background and kind of understanding of that side of it. And I'd worked at a startup in the past, so kind of had some understanding of roughly how development works, but not really. So we obviously knew that there was kind of three paths from day one, which is either you go agency, freelance, or actually to hire someone and start from there. Mm-hmm. We heard so many stories from friends who were working at startups or had started their own ones about going down the freelance route of just being left with 50 grand's worth of a useless product because the freelancer quit kind of gone. And so many people warned us against that. So that quite quickly, we got rid of that as an idea. Then hiring someone in, we realized that you have to pay PYE and kind of actually how complicated it got. And then obviously, okay, well, what do we hire? Do we hire full stack? We've got, you know, we knew from day one that our product, it's a luxury service. So the MVP can't look cheap. Mm-hmm. It has to, more than is the case for a lot of other people. So we might be slightly different in that sense. But, you know, our average basket value is in the thousands, which means that people don't want to spend thousands of pounds on something that looks incomplete. So we kind of quite quickly kind of the decision was made for us that we'd go agency. So we reached out to kind of everyone that we knew we couldn't afford. and so with the logic being that when we found out what they could do, we could then go to people who we could afford.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's see if we can find a startup or someone like that. We ended up getting really lucky in the fact that, so we went with a company called Neverbland, and they just offered us an equity deal. I think Scott, who's their CEO, just really, really got what we were doing. Mm-hmm. They were in a position where they'd recently built the site for a couple of startups that went on to be pretty big. And I think they kind of really had seen the potential in...
Yeah, they do a lot of that, don't they?
Yeah, they do a lot of that. And I think they just really saw the potential. And they hadn't taken equity, I don't think, in the previous ones. I think they realised that, either rightly or wrongly, saw that there was the potential with us that for it to be a good decision. And that meant that we got to build something that was so much bigger than what we could have done. At that point, we had raised a pretty small friends and family round. Mm-hmm. And so... It kind of meant that we could really, really build something that, without them, I doubt we'd be anywhere near where we are at the moment.
No, we wouldn't be. I mean, we got really, really lucky with them, and the fact that they designed kind of beautiful websites, which is what they're really, really good at. And they did a fantastic job, I think, with ours. And yeah, I think it really was kind of the makings of us as a company. You know, not that we've made it, but, you know, it really is it gave us the real building blocks to push on and put us in a really strong position 6 months in.
I mean, it's kind of, whether it be them or kind of another agency, but that meant that when we took, from the day of turning the website on, people landing on us didn't know that we were a startup. Mm-hmm. So that meant that big corporates suddenly used us because we looked legitimate. I mean, we looked, you know, the MVP looked on par with Airbnb, all those kind of people that had that kind of quality to it, which meant that suddenly, we could go into meetings and people would think that we knew what we were talking about, which kind of week one we had no idea what we were talking about.
Yeah, and there's always that I mean, and Neverbland did a great job on it. I remember seeing it when it launched and being really impressed. And that's the thing, an MVP doesn't need to be bad looking, but it's where you put your focus. Like, what's the most important thing? Obviously for you guys, that visual layer is really important, and it looks fantastic. So.
Yeah, I mean we obviously sacrificed the back end for that, in terms of we knew that fundamentally Hugh and I could physically pull all the strings. So, you know, since launch, that's where the focus has been on, is let's build out the back end, let's make it. We knew that we weren't going to have 1,000 orders on day one, so we could afford to have a system that actually was incredibly manual once an order had been placed.
That's the classic way of doing it. Yeah.
And then, but looked like everything was incredibly slick. Regardless of what everyone's advice was, that's very much what Hugh and I said, like, no, we don't mind being here until 2 a.m. every night, having to manually do everything, as long as the website looks great. Because that is going to be, because that's who my mum's going to use. And that's who every person I know who would ever book a catering company, that's where they're going to put their faith in.
So since then, you say you built out the back end of the product. So now it's all kind of all singing, all dancing, more technical.
Yeah, it's getting there. Like, you know, that's what we're constantly pushing. I mean, it's everything from the last 6 weeks has been marketing focus, has been the real designs we've been pushing out. So that's things like custom landing pages, all those kind of things that one should do if you want to be able to push out more content and help kind of rank with SEO and mean have more kind of accurate PPC campaigns.
Yeah.
I think for us, the really big moment in terms of back end came when the original MVP didn't have a chat feature between the caterer and the customer. It's probably the one thing that Hugh and I would go back and tell ourselves actually we should have pushed for. We knew we were pretty confident it was necessary and we were kind of talked out of it a bit. And that the difference that made was pretty huge in terms of it went from kind of an order a week to orders a day as soon as that was switched on. Like
people were chatting before they placed an order and that allowed them to complete
it. The way it works is that you put in your inquiry with the caterer and then you can have a chat with them there and, you know, prices can be edited if there are extra things that you want to add or take away or however it works. It just means it's a far more interactive.
Interesting.
At that point, we were taking people's credit card details up front. And there was obviously a huge amount of drop off because people just didn't want to put in a £2,000 order kind of at the click of a button, the same way that you would with a basket on Amazon. They wanted some form of validation that the person existed or there was something, or that even that their event was special in some way. A lot of different things that they wanted to feel.
Pardon? Which is correct.
That's the biggest lesson we've learned. Yeah. How do you make an online booking platform make someone's event feel special and let them feel that they're customizing it? And that was kind of a really, really big thing for us was making, you know, chat gives them one part of it, but it's having intercom on the site so they can talk to you.
Can
talk to the people behind it. There's lots of different ways that you can do it. And there's lots of ways you can do it at scale. So it's not mutually exclusive, but it is the case that, you know, that's where we lacked for the first couple of months. That's kind of where we'd made our mistake.
I mean, that's great that you guys are kind of changing things and seeing how people are behaving and reacting to that. How do you keep in touch with your customers? How do you learn these things?
Due to the nature of the basket value, it generally means that each order will normally necessitate one or a couple of phone calls, which means that you can actually get a really good amount. And we want that to be the case now at the moment. I mean, obviously in the future, we want this to be a booking platform. But at the moment, we're still at the stage where it's so vital for us to get as much information from each customer as possible.
Yep.
So, you know, we'll take, firstly, the most important thing being how they found us, and then take as much demographic data as we possibly can to make sure that we know who is booking through us, and which can really help inform, you know, marketing in the future as well.
I mean, to begin with, we're really good at sending people on site. So Hugh and I went to a lot of events, and then when we hired, you know, our first couple of hires, we made them go to a lot of the events that were getting booked through us. So whether that both private events are from kind of 40ths and stuff like that, or we just asked if we could have someone help manage the traders or something, through to big kind of big public events and everything, we really wanted, where is every single pain point? And so we learn as much and we can talk about it with as much confidence as possible, but also that we just had a really good understanding of who is the customer, like what do they look like, what do they want, and then therefore how can we better service their needs. I mean, and that's kind of led to, you know, something like the reason that we're going to launch alcohol when we kind of as soon as we're going to is that we just from talking to them we realized that there was a huge amount of demand for it.
They're
all looking for it, and then the basket value is four times the size.
That's
so
the
it's kind
way.
Of it was a really logical, and I think that just shows that if you do talk to your customers as often as possible, you genuinely learn quite a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And how do you keep on top of like the technical development of the application itself? I mean, you guys aren't techie, but how are you managing that? How are you deciding what feature to do next? That kind of thing.
So we're very customer-led again. So that's been the main driving forces. Where do we see the most amount of like conversion coming from, or growth, or how do we? So whether it's, you know, making the customer happy, or whether it's actually just simply what features can we put in there that are going to get more people to convert? And so that's kind of been the main focus of it. The nice thing about being a startup, we're going into a massive industry that no one else is in, which means that we don't, you know, it's not marginal gains. We can take pretty big swings and see pretty big changes overnight as a result. So we're not kind of, it's not how do we up the conversion by 0.1%, it's how do we up the conversion by 15%.
Wow.
And that can, that one feature can genuinely make that difference. It's gone, our conversion has probably gone up by nearly 10 times in the last 3 months.
Wow.
Because of just little features we put in.
And that's incredible.
That's the nature of kind of being, going from MVP to something that's the next stage of MVP. So that's been kind of one side of it. It's also been really driven by other people in the business. So people in marketing or sales really pushing us to have features that they think would help on the back end, things that kind of would help them learn. And then just growth. Yeah. I guess, I don't know if you've got any.
No, I would say, well, one thing we do try and be very, very hot on is making sure that everyone from the rest of the team is having as much of an insight as an input.
Mm-hmm.
To the future development of the website as we do. Obviously, we try and put forward as many ideas as possible, but obviously having 8 heads on something is much better than having 2. So, if someone's directly involved in bringing the traders on board, we make sure that we're working with her to make sure that she's influencing where we go on that front. And same with our business development guy. We just make sure we're getting as many ideas as possible from them to going forward.
And that was an interesting kind of learning curve for us, especially with the first couple of employees, is when you start handing over control and when you start really, really trusting people to be better than you at roles that you'd previously done. And so for Hugo, that's onboarding new traders, is how much are you willing to let someone new do it in a slightly different style? And the same with kind of across the board, and gone from the point where we were the sales department, we went to every single meeting when there's 2 of you, and then suddenly you're trusting people to go to meetings without you there. And that was kind of I think, so having that trust and letting them kind of drive in which direction you go.
Very tough, isn't it? Yeah, I mean,
it's really hard.
We've gone from a 2-man company of a designer and developer to having us not doing any of that anymore.
Yeah.
And handing it off to the team. And you've got to have that confidence that people can do a good job and actually do better than you.
Hi, this is Russ from Lighthouse. A big part of my role is planning and designing usable and effective product interfaces. Check out some of the stuff we've been working on recently at wearelighthouse.com/ourwork.
But it's good that you get the team involved in that kind of like thinking around where the business goes and stuff, because that's always going to get them more invigorated and caring in the company as well, right?
Definitely. I think, it's the previous startup size that have done it, and I think that's probably the same for you as well. Stuff like morning stand-ups do just make such a difference. I mean,
of course,
they're so cliched and everyone tells you what you should do, but
it
actually
works.
Yeah, if you get 8 people signed up and telling everyone what they're up to, and then everyone feels like they're aware of what everyone's up, it does make a huge difference to what everyone's doing.
Yeah. And also I think one thing that we have been quite keen to do particularly is employ people who are good generalists. Mm-hmm. So people who, they're very good at their jobs and the specific roles, but people who we really feel can actually step into other people's roles and help out in other areas where possible, who are all good on the phone, who are good at handling customers, good at handling the caterers. And I feel that that's something that we've actually got right, is everyone who we've hired can step into other people's roles.
So what are the short, medium, long-term goals for the business?
Well, it's really interesting time to be going into it at the moment, because we are just going in for our second round of funding at the moment. So obviously future plans are something that we're talking about a lot, and we touched on it earlier, but there's the expansion in the near term. There's the expansion into mobile alcohol traders and traditional caterers. So that's working with restaurants so far. I mean, some of the big names that we're going to be bringing on board to the website are people like Gymkhana and Bao, who can come along and offer a more traditional catering option to the street food side of things as well.
So the idea is expand out. So at the moment, street food, and we want to be a platform where you can get everything from a cheeseburger through to a Michelin star Indian meal. That's
nice.
The idea. So whatever the catering you're looking for, whether it's alcohol or food, whether it's low end or high end, we kind of want to be that central platform, but only working with like the best at what they do. So it's the best cheeseburger you can buy, or it's the best thing you can buy, and kind of really offering those kind of smaller traders a platform where they can reach customers that they can't at the moment.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And
another aspect is going to be regional expansion as well, because at the moment we get a lot of offers, well, a lot of requests in from all over the country, and largely speaking at the moment, we're often able to help, but it's still largely London-based.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to be moving up to Edinburgh at some point fairly soon. It makes sense. There's lots of great street food and traditional caterers up there. There's a lot of demand for it. And also it gives us a really good idea of whether we can operate the platform overseas as well, because obviously we will have someone on the ground in Edinburgh as well, but a lot of it's going to be done remotely from London. Yeah. So if we can do Edinburgh, it means that we can start to think about spreading our wings to places like the States, mm-hmm. Places potentially like the Middle East, where street food is actually a really kind of, well, a hot topic at the moment. And and the States obviously is sort of the godfather of it all,
because it's where it all comes from.
Yeah. They love it. It's, yeah. Yeah, in places like LA, it's warm every day.
Yeah.
So there's a potential to
have a burger any day.
You can have a burger any day. Whereas, you know, obviously it's a huge seasonal thing out here.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of expansion, we're quite lucky and we're more of a city model than a national model. So we kind of see us more like a Deliveroo or an Uber in terms of you'd add city by city, not necessarily country by country. But the kind of advantage we have over a lot of people is that our radius is about 60 miles around each city. Mm. So that's the distance that they're willing to travel. So when someone like Deliveroo moves into a new city, they'd do about, let's say each restaurant can do about a mile and a half or something. We're able to, so if you add Edinburgh, you're actually adding the metropolitan area. So in London, you know, we're only London based at the moment, but I mean, our traders reach up to Oxford and Cambridge. Mm-hmm. So it's regional expansion and then kind of platform expansion are kind of the two main things we're focused on.
Yeah.
And then kind of doing a fundraise that really lets us go from advertising and marketing that's test driven and low budget, which is kind of what everyone's doing at the moment, it's what you should do as a startup, through to actually, okay, what can we do if we put tens of thousands of pounds into a month rather than a few hundred pounds into a month?
Exactly. Show what works and then pile money.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think you guys would do differently if you did all this again?
Well, we touched upon the head of marketing thing earlier. I think I really would reaffirm that point, is mm-hmm. that something that should really be looked at from the beginning if you're setting up any sort of a company. Marketing is, I guess, it's a leg that you have to stand on. It's mm-hmm. so important. And also, it's so important in giving you an insight into what you need to turn into going forwards. And I think that's the one thing that we lacked at the start.
We kind of shot from the hip a bit too much, and kind of Hugo and I reckoned things and kind of follow our instincts. To be honest, we got quite lucky in a lot of
things.
A lot of the instincts were right, but actually, you know, we could have had the conversion could be 10 times better.
Yeah.
4 months ago, if we'd actually, you know, we were advised by people to hire marketing straight off. We went with agents to begin with, which is great, but I mean, they just didn't offer you the same, anywhere near the same level that you need if you have someone in house. So I think that would be the biggest lesson. That's the thing we kind of talk to each other about the most.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we've done it all right, but I would just say knowing your customer is the most important thing above all else. And for us, I think it's harder than most, just because it's such a kind of disparate range of people who are booking catering for their event. It's really something everyone eats and everyone has parties. So it's really hard for us to nail down exactly who our, you know, customer X is, but we're getting there and we will get there. And I just think, again, you can never put enough time into absolutely nailing down who you're.
It's so important, isn't it?
Sounds
like you're doing a good job already, and you're still not that far into the journey. So
it feels like we are, but so you're absolutely right. We're nowhere near.
Well, on that note, why don't you tell people where they can find out more about you online?
So the website is feastit.com. That's feastit.com. And I think
you can talk to us on intercom.
You can chat to us all day on intercom. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's been really interesting having you guys in to talk more about the platform and what Feastit's doing. Maybe we'll catch up again in the future and see how it is.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
Good luck with the new funding round.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want more product leadership content or hear more interviews with people we've been talking to before, then head over to the Lighthouse site, wearelighthouse.com. To find out more about our product leadership framework, check out wearelighthouse.com/PLF. You can find us on Twitter using @wearelighthouse. If you've enjoyed the show, then we'd love a rating in iTunes to help spread the word. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to see the archive and any future shows. Until next time, see you all later.